Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, I don't know about you, but it just seems like with all the ways that the news has been dominated by salacious stories this week, it's really good to get to Friday.
Couldn't get here soon enough. This is a short week, and it still felt like it went on forever.
That's right. All right, well, let's get to the good martini now, and this comes to us from National Review and your colleague David French. For those of you who are with us on Thursday, you know that we focused on an open letter from students at Liberty University excoriating their president, Jerry Falwell Jr., for openly endorsing Donald Trump, even in the face of the recent allegations and essentially sullying the name of Liberty University in the process. And we said that was a very fair criticism, not only of Falwell, but a lot of other conservatives. But the shoe also belongs on the other foot. And that's where your colleague David French comes in from earlier this week. He calls it a note to Democrats over 40 years old. Quote, "I don't want to hear your shock and horror over Donald Trump. I really don't. Almost 20 years ago, in the face of credible and serious claims of serious sexual misconduct, including misconduct in the Oval Office, the overwhelming majority of you chose to circle the wagons to retain political power, even when Clinton's resignation would have left Democrats in control of the White House. So now you're mounting your high horse to protect the Republic from an alleged predator like Trump. You've lost your credibility. You had an opportunity to do the right thing, and now your outrage shouldn't be confused in any way, shape, or form with principle. You mock Trump for placing winning above all else, but that's exactly what you did. You helped debase our culture, excused lying, and normalized adultery for the sake of keeping Bill Clinton in power. You advanced absurd notions like compartmentalization to separate a man's character from his competence. I believe Donald Trump should step down. I don't believe he should get a single conservative vote this November. But when I look across the aisle, I don't see allies. I see opportunists. I'll believe your moral stands the minute they impose on you even the smallest political cost. I have a feeling I'll be waiting a long time." Jim, that is spot on.
It is, and it's. I think it's necessary, needs to be spoken here. I'd like to hear at least one person who's denouncing Donald Trump right now on the Democratic side to say, you know what, Republicans were right in the late 90s when they focused on this and they said this was beneath the presidency and this is not just inappropriate behavior, but unacceptable behavior for a United States president. You can take this election of, you very often get this, it was just an affair, gentlemen lied about affairs, it's what a gentleman does, which is really twisting the word gentleman inside out.
Right.
Even if you want to point out, hey, look, everything with Lewinsky was consensual. It's just flat out inappropriate for the president of the United States to be having a relationship like that with an intern. And of course, then sending up Vernon Jordan to set up jobs for there, right? I mean, most of us, are hoping that our connections will give us letters of recommendation or help us out. We're not supposed to get them for doing that kind of thing. And we're not supposed to have the entire resources of the federal government all working to get us those good jobs because of what we do with the president. The whole thing was completely inappropriate. There are a lot of offices that have rules about whether bosses can sleep with their subordinates. But we're all going to shrug our shoulders at the president sleeping with an intern? Are you kidding me? But that was the argument from there. The entire Democratic Party that had denounced Clarence Thomas because of allegations of sexual harassment all of a sudden felt like, Paula Jones was unworthy of any attention, that she was absolutely disregarded. And I still remember James Carville, that serpent of a man, standing on national television saying, you drag a dollar bill through a trailer park and you just never know what you're going to find. basically calling her trailer trash. To hell with you, James Carville, right? If you did that today to any of the women accusing Donald Trump, the media would crucify you and you'd kind of have it coming. That's a terrible thing to say about that, since I think we all look at this and say, you know what? We don't know exactly what happened in that hotel room between Paula Jones and Bill Clinton, but there's a pattern of behavior there that makes her allegations sound pretty plausible. And I haven't even gotten to Juanita Broderick. So I was, as you're going through the David French piece, Greg, I was thinking about something. We heard a lot of argument from a lot of Republicans, particularly in 2012, that Barack Obama hadn't really been vetted by the national media in 2008. They fell so in love with this happy narrative that they didn't want to look that hard at his past, not-so-amazing accomplishments of his time as a community activist or community organizer. The number of times he voted present in the Illinois Senate, The very modest record of accomplishment as an Illinois state senator. The fact that he was in the Senate for about 10 minutes before he started running for president. You know, and this idea of vetting. Well, if you talk to people who were reporters on the gubernatorial beat in Arkansas all of those years, everybody knew that Bill Clinton was a relentless womanizer, had all kinds of affairs, and had all kinds of kind of, you know, what we can now say is creepy, aggressive, direct, and some, a lot of people would say predatory behavior towards women. Did some of this get hashed out in 92? I suppose, but they kept denying it. The very first time most Americans saw Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, it was 60 Minutes right after the Super Bowl in early 1992, where they looked us in the eye and they said there was no relationship with Jennifer Flowers. Later on, under oath, Bill Clinton admitted that, in fact, he did have an affair with Jennifer Flowers. So the first time the Clintons appeared before America, they lied to us. All right? This is all worthy of being denounced. And it's great to see Democrats now are, oh, well, yes, sexual assault is really bad. Oh, sexual harassment's terrible. Oh, nobody in power should treat a woman like this. Great, but please tell me you apply this consistently, not just to the people who are on the other side of the aisle. So they deserve, Democrats deserve every bit of grief they're getting from David French. And I think everybody, left, right, and center, should look at them and say, you are a bunch of shameless opportunists who don't mean anything that you say. Your entire measuring stick about who's telling the truth depends on whether they have an R or a D after your name. And you are, that is a disgrace to public life. That's not the way people are supposed to behave. America is better than this. You have embarrassed the country with this kind of behavior.
Excellently.
I'm fired up about this.
Excellently said. And there's plenty of other Democrats who he could have referred to there. Ted Kennedy, Chris Dodd had quite the reputation. We obviously know about some of the more recent ones. Anthony Weiner actually paid a price for his indiscretions politically.
Yes,
yeah. So we'll see if the sudden tilt to the moral side sticks with the Democrats. Something tells me that it won't. But let's move on to something even more frightening. This is courtesy of Yahoo, but this has been kind of coming out in different stories over the past few days here, Jim. With diplomatic relations between Moscow and Washington at their lowest point since the Cold War, turning on Russian television can be an alarming experience. For the past month, Russian media outlets have been punctuated with reports asking people whether they are ready for nuclear war. Quote, if it should happen one day, every one of you should know where the nearest bomb shelter is. It's best to find out now, according to one particularly fevered report on the Russian state-owned channel NTV. Russia's main current affairs show, hosted by a presenter known by critics as the country's propagandist-in-chief. There's more to this because since September, Russia has conducted a nationwide civil defense drill purportedly involving 40 million people, preparing them for catastrophes, among them nuclear fallout. Even more bluntly, Russia announced this week it was moving nuclear-capable ballistic missiles into its northern European enclave, Kaliningrad, putting them within striking distance of Western capitals. So, Jim, who knows if they're just saber-rattling here or whether they actually have some nefarious plan to, you know, push their way into the Baltics or further into Ukraine and dare the West to do anything about it, but this is not good.
Whether or not what you're seeing on Russian television represents the accurate thinking of those in the inner circles of power in Moscow or whether it's just your standard issue saber-rattling propaganda, it's very hard to kind of deny the fact that year by year, since Putin has been in power, we have seen Russia getting more and more aggressive, more and more blatant in their ambitions, more and more making one provocation after another. You can look to the invasion of Georgia in 2008. You can look to the takeover of the peninsula of Crimea. You can look at Ukraine. You can look at the fact that Russian-backed rebels shot down that Malaysian Airlines jet with really no consequence. And I think at this point, it seems pretty clear that Vladimir Putin is very used to getting his way. He's very used to getting what he wants, and he knows that particularly after this, under this president, he was not going to face any serious opposition. You might get a critical speech here and there. You know, it's not like there would really be any serious consequence to Russia in a way that would make them fear further provocation. When you have this kind of a pattern, it only escalates. It only gets bigger. It only gets better. And a bit like this week we talked about, you know, people asked over the weekend, why was this tape of Trump saying these awful things caused so many folks to jump off the bandwagon and say they couldn't endorse him, they couldn't support him? You never know what the straw that's going to break the camel's back is going to be. And in this case, Putin is, at some point is going to do something that's going to be so big and so bad that even the Obama administration or Hillary Clinton or some other world leaders are going to have to react. At some point, NATO won't be able to ignore it. You know, who knows whether it could be a provocation that would antagonize China. Obviously, Eastern Europe is the most likely theater for something like this to happen. But at some point, Vladimir Putin is going to bite off more than he can chew, and some other great power of the world is going to respond. And when they do, it's going to escalate very quickly. And so, look, does this guarantee lead to a nuclear conflict? No, not necessarily. But it's interesting to see how quickly Russia goes to that and uses that as their cudgel, uses that as their trump card, no pun intended, for any type of conflict that occurs. And you just kind of left with this nagging feeling that basically at some point Putin is going to, you know, push too hard. There's going to be a necessary response. And they're so used to there being no response that to them it's going to be seen as a slap in the face that requires counterattack. And from there, you know, what's the line from Hunt for Red October by Fred Thompson? This will get out of control and we'll be lucky to live through it. That's kind of the mood it feels right now as you watch ever-increasing provocations from Russia.
Well, Jim, you mentioned that Obama has done very little to check Putin's ambition over the past 8 years, even the time where Putin technically wasn't the president, but we all know he was really still calling the shots. And there's a lot of military experts who don't think very well of Obama, who think that Putin may try to get as much as he can out of these last few months that Obama's in office, especially when they don't quite know who's coming next. And once they do know who's coming next, that might even accelerate things. But one thing I noticed here on this Yahoo story, because they linked to a Good Morning America video talking about some of these troubling steps the Russians are taking, all credit to Michael Strahan for broadening his career. But when Michael Strahan starts asking the questions about the extent of our relationship with the Russians right now and all the difficulties we have right now, it's a little bit awkward to hear him take the lead on those questions.
Yeah, Michael Strahan, the former NFL defensive lineman, is used to dealing with a completely different kind of Russian attack.
Oh, very good. All right, let's get on to the crazy now. And yesterday we talked about how Trump is either scaling back, maybe pulling out of Virginia for all intents and purposes. His campaign's pushing back against that story. But who knows? The polls certainly don't look good for him in Virginia. And according to those same reports, Trump's basically focusing on a four-state strategy to claw his way to 270 in the Electoral College, and that's Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. That, of course, assumes that a lot of these other states that you expect to go red do go red. And the biggest of them all is now in question. This is courtesy of WFAA-TV in Dallas. After perhaps the most damaging week of his campaign, Donald Trump's lead in Texas has slipped to 4 percentage points within the margin of error, according to a new poll released Thursday night. The survey, commissioned by WFAA-TV and Texas Tegna television stations, shows Trump leading Hillary Clinton by 47% to 43%. The margin of error is 4%, so it could be as much as 8, it could be as little as nothing. And to put the figures in context, before this all came out, Trump was only up 6 or 7 points, so he certainly wasn't building the huge lead that previous Republican nominees have, including Mitt Romney and even John McCain in Texas. So, Jim, given all that's happened, the fact that Trump still appears to be ahead suggests that he's probably going to hold on there. But the fact that you even have to worry about Texas at this stage of a presidential race is amazing.
I think it's an indicator of how Trump is very different from a traditional Republican candidate. And maybe that helps in a couple of states like Iowa or Ohio. But in the end, he puts other states at risk. And you could argue that because of changing demographics, Texas was going to get closer and closer year by year. But let's face it, you know, back in 2014, Democrats got shellacked in this state. I mean, they didn't win a single statewide office. They got, you know, crushed in contest after contest. So this is not a state you should have to worry about. You pointed out, you know, Romney won this state by 15. McCain won this state by almost 12. And now, you know, according to this new survey, he's only up by 4. Now, do I think Trump's going to win Texas on Election Day? Yeah, sure, I think so. But you know what? If you really get that worst case scenario, if, you know, Republican women voters start abandoning him in droves, if you start seeing, you know, the kinds of just more scandals, more things that more Republicans just cannot bring themselves to vote for and find it abominable, then maybe it's in the cards. Or if nothing else, this has got to encourage Democrats to say, okay, even if this isn't our year in Texas, some cycle in the not-too-distant future, we're going to be able to really make a campaign, make a race for this. Now, again, I think they're helped a great deal by Trump's mistakes here and his, you know, missteps and just the kind of abominable character flaws that he has. But let's face it, even before this one, as you said, 6%, 7% margin, that's way less than you're used to seeing in a state like Texas. And You know, I think the comparison to McCain will be really interesting, both in terms of which states Trump wins and which states Trump loses. That in a year, you know, just 2 or 3 months after the giant economic meltdown, which is probably about as bad a circumstance as you possibly could have for Democrats, it's conceivable Trump will underperform that. Happy weekend, everybody.
Jim, I'm sure some of our listeners are going to want to stab me in the eyeball with a rusty fork for pointing to 2020 before this horrific election cycle is over. But my early prediction is that in 2020, there will be a sizable margin for the Republican nominee because he will be from Texas and he won't be a senator.
Ooh, interesting. You're predicting Greg Abbott?
I am predicting. I think Greg Abbott could be an excellent choice for us in 4 years, assuming, of course, that the Republican is not the incumbent.
That's a really interesting thing. And this could be this is our bonus martini, everybody. one, I think there are a lot of people will look at him as a kind of look at his record. I think if you're a two-term governor of Texas and you've presided over good times and scandal-free, then yeah, people are going to look at that. Also, an inspiring personal story, a man who probably went through one of the worst things you can go through and came through with not just a wonderful attitude towards life and the opportunities it brings you. I also point out, I have a sneaking suspicion. I could be very wrong, Greg, but I have a feeling the 2020 Republican nominee, assuming Trump doesn't win the presidency, I know that's far-fetched for a lot of people out there, but assuming Trump's not running for re-election, that the Republican nominee will be somebody who did not run this cycle. And, I don't know whether it's going to be, Ben Sasse or Tom Cotton or kind of these other names that get mentioned out there, but I have a feeling this cycle is going to be seen as just such a colossal mess, such a, top to bottom disaster that anybody who ran is going to be kind of seen as having to overcome just bad memories of that. And the party will be ready for a fresh face. So I'm sure at some point, 4 years in the future, Greg, they will go back into the archives of this program, come back and kind of quote this back to us and scoff at us that we didn't see the Jim Gilmore, Mike Huckabee ticket coming.
I will gladly eat crow if that happens, because I don't think anybody's going to see that coming. Jim, have a good weekend. We deserve it.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.